All right.
He said he'd be here in a minute.
Okay. Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Monday, March 14, 2011. We currently don't have a quorum, but we are going to get started with testimony today. The first item on the agenda, Senate File 208, Senator Hand. Welcome to the committee, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I will try to be expeditious. I have another committee I need to be in at the same time, so I will try to be quick here if I can. Senate File 208 is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I understand that there are some people here today that may want to help in the testimony, but it is a bill that affects the structure of negotiation for teacher employment contracts. Essentially, I mean, it's not a very complicated bill. What it does is, in Section 1, precludes teachers from requesting interest arbitration. Section 2 provides authorization for school boards to negotiate with representatives during a three-month period, beginning September 1 of each year, when the school is not in session. And if negotiations do not produce an agreement in the odd-numbered year, they must be suspended, and the terms of the preceding collective bargaining agreement will remain in effect during the interim, and they will take up the negotiation in the following summer. If the parties do not reach an agreement at the even-numbered year, the school board is authorized to require final offer total package to be determined by an arbitrator selected by the Bureau of Mediation Services. Provision Section 3 prohibits teachers from striking. Section 4 is just providing some conforming language. Section 5 repeals the January 15th contract negotiation deadline that's in current law. And Section 6 makes the date effective July 1st, 2013. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a brief amendment to offer. We were trying to get that drafted up. I don't know if that has been delivered to the committee. If not, we could probably do it orally. It's not too complicated, I think. And I'd like to offer that as an author's amendment, if I could.
All right. We have no language, Senator Hand. Would you like to do an oral amendment?
I'm looking around to see if Ed Cook from the Education Committee, he was helping me draft that. But let's proceed and see if we can do this orally, Mr. Chairman, if your committee will indulge me. What I'd like to suggest on line 1.23, strike the word may in the middle of the sentence and replace that with must. And then the last four lines of section 2, 2.8 through 2.11, want to change that. And so if you go to line 2.8, after the word board, strike may either. Going down to 2.9, striking the number 1 in parentheses and the word require. And also further in that 2.9 line, the words be determined by. And then on line 2.10, insert between services and the word based the phrase who must determine the matter. And then at the end of that sentence, strike the word or and the entire 2.11 line. The intent of this, Mr. Chairman and members, is to take away the second provision in the option that is given at the end of Section 2, which would require there could be a choice as it was introduced to allow for unilateral implementation by school boards. We're deleting that. And so the language would read, if I may, from 2.7, if agreement is not reached during the three-month period in the even-numbered year, the school board must submit the matter to an arbitrator selected by the Bureau of Mediation Services, who must determine the matter based on a final offer total package from each party, period, and then strike the remainder of Section 2, of course, would be gone. That is the amendment. I hope that you've tracked with that, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Senator Hand. Mr. Bodern, do you have that? Are you?
Chairman, I have it, and I can restate it if you want.
Please do.
Okay. On page 1, line 23, delete may and insert must. And on page 2, line 8, delete may either and insert must, delete may either, colon, and insert must submit. On page 2, line 9, delete paren 1, require, and delete be determined by. On page 2, line 10, after services, insert who must determine the matter. So the new sentence beginning on line 2.7 reads, if agreement is not reached during the three-month period in the even-numbered year, the school board must submit the matter to an arbitrator selected by the Bureau of Mediation Services, who must determine the matter based on a final offer total package from each party.
Thank you, Mr. Bodern. Senator Thompson? Senator Thompson moves the amendment.
Yes, Senator Thompson moves. Sorry. Thought we were going to have some
All
discussion.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Prevails. Senator Hand.
Thank you. That is essentially the bill, Mr. Chairman. As I said, it was brought to me by the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I believe that what this really does is create, a condition where teachers as employees are treated as essential employees. And I did look up in Minnesota Statute 179A.03 that defines essential employees, and just for the committee's information, currently essential employee means firefighters, peace officers, police and fire department public safety dispatchers, guards at correctional facilities, confidential employees, supervisory employees, assistant county attorneys, assistant city attorneys, principals, and assistant principals. And this language would, in effect, add teachers to that list of essential employees. I think the idea, what we're interested in, is creating conditions at the local school district level where school boards are elected officials and the bargaining units have an opportunity to reach agreement on contracts outside of school time and do so in a timely fashion that would also not provide the opportunity for disruption in the form of a strike where public parents, kids, and the learning opportunities are disrupted. So that is essentially the bill as it is, and I would stand for questions, or there may be some additional testimony that would like to be offered.
Thank you, Senator Hand, and we do have some on the list here that would like to testify. Are there any questions currently of the members? Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, how much does this save the state budget?
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Goodwin, this does not have a fiscal note. I don't know that it can be determined. There may be, I guess, potentially some savings, but it's not been fiscal noted, and so I don't have an answer if there is any.
So, Mr. Chair and
Senator
Goodwin. Hahn. We are really not doing anything here in this bill in our last 2 weeks before the first deadline to save the state budget any money or try to resolve our $5 billion shortfall.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, I think part of at least my understanding of the chairman's direction with the committee, and certainly our direction generally, is to not just solve the budget but also bring reform to what we do and how we do things in state government. I think that long-term, the effect of changing this would make the opportunity to settle contracts in a more timely fashion. I think empower local school boards to be able to manage the single largest cost that they have in their budget more expeditiously. I think there is, in my opinion, certainly over time, an opportunity to save cost, at least at the school district level as we go forward, and perhaps at the state level as well if But that it can't be fiscal noted, but I think there is an opportunity to save money long term. But this is a reform option that we believe is important if we're going to change the cost drivers in government going forward.
Well, Mr. Chair and
Senator Goodwin.
Senator Hand, you know, we've got very little time left to resolve this $5 billion shortfall, and I wouldn't really say cutting the legs off of collective bargaining is going to do anything whatsoever to resolve that shortfall. So I'm wondering why, especially with you as chair of the Health and Human Service Committee, you've got a lot of work to do in your committee on real possible reform. I don't see this as reform, but we have a difference of opinion on that. So when are we going to get to the budget issues, our state budget issues that we need to take care of?
Senator Goodwin, we are working in that direction, and along, and I have made it very clear that along with any kind of budgetary matters, I am interested in innovation, ways of reforming what we are doing today. And as I understand it, this bill, its intent is to establish a new process. And so that's why we're hearing this. Senator Cohen, you have.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to that for a second. I wanted, relative to Senator Hand, if you want to wait for testimony before we get into fuller committee debate.
Senator Cohen, I just wanted to know if there were any pre-questions before we get into the testimony.
I can hold off, but Mr. Chairman, I hope you, since you respond to Senator Goodwin, I want to get into a back and forth. I just want to make a couple of comments. I certainly applaud you for the work you're doing relative to trying to bring some reforms. I may or may not agree with some of what's attempted. To be honest with you, I think we're going to hear a bill at some point today authored by Senator Chamberlain, which I actually have some interest in. I think we might want to offer some amendments to it, but I think the thrust is not a bad one. It's some stuff I've tried to do in the past. So putting aside, do I agree or I disagree with the attempt to bring about some reform, I certainly agree with the thrust of that. Or do I agree with particular aspects of it? I think the concern of Senator Goodwin is, and obviously it's a different environment, is we haven't had a budget book in front of us yet relative to the promulgation of this committee's omnibus budget bill. I think that's what Senator Goodwin's referring to. And for new members, I think it's important to note that when we've heard the budgets in the past, you know, we've had commissioners in, we've said, okay, if we cut your agency by $10 million or $5 million, what's it going to do? We go through the line items. And this is not just simply a Democratic versus a Republican thing. You know, when I confreed one of the previous State Departments, I had two counterparts in the House, Representative Krenke and Representative McElroy. They knew this stuff backwards and forwards. You know, those were the hearings they had. They'd go through the line items, whatever. So I think, Senator Goodwin, I think that's what you're referring to, is this is kind of a unique process in the history of not just the state Senate, but the state legislature.
Senator Cohen, when what I can tell you, if that's of interest of you, when we come back this evening and reconvene, I can have our analysts run through that for you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, run
before
through.
Before we hear Senator Chamberlain's bill. I mean, it's online. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you misunderstand me. I know the budget's online. I mean, I've got the entirety of the governor's proposal in my office, and I've gone through a lot of it with some thoroughness. What I don't know, what I don't get the opportunity to do, and the presentation is usually in committees, is to say have the commissioner. I mean, for instance, if you take the admin budget as an example, the admin budget is filled with revolving fund accounts, internal service accounts, general fund accounts. It's a complicated budget. I know if I go back 10 years ago, I hate to kind of lapse into the good old days. You know, Representative Krenke and I talked about this during the session. We each had 5 to 7 hearings, committee hearings, with the full committee, with the admin folks, to understand what we were doing, what we were not doing. And my concern is, in this particular committee, where we have a pretty ambitious target, and I know, Mr. Chairman, I assume we'll get to some of that with some of the reform measures, and again, whether I support that or not, that is certainly a correct way to go. You're certainly entitled to book a number relative to some of the reform pieces, if it can be booked. But, you know, if we're going to cut, let's use my example of admin. Let's say we're going to have a proposed cut of 10%, 20%, 25%. What will we be doing or not doing with that department? What services will be cut off? Those are the kinds of things we don't have answers to, absent, you know, fuller committee discussion. So that was the point.
Thank you, Senator Cohen, and as I mentioned, we will be looking at all that. We have a pretty aggressive schedule here over the next 12 days that we will get completed, so let's focus on on what we have before us right now, which is Senate File 208. If there's nothing else, I'd like to call our first testifier up. I believe it's Mr. Kite, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Please state your name for the record, and then you may proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and we represent the central administrators, central office administrators, and the superintendents in the state of Minnesota. Just brief testimony in favor of this bill. We, as school leaders, are looking for a number of ways in which we can help our school districts run on as professional a level and efficient a level as possible. The suggestion we're bringing forward here is to simply remove the negotiation process between our teachers and our school boards from times when our students are in school and in session. In many of the large school districts, these negotiation processes occur well away from the schools. Attorneys hired by both sides, and they deal with it somewhere outside of the school setting. But in many of our middle-sized school districts and our small school districts, these negotiations are done by school employees and local citizens serving as school board members, and at times the tension becomes palpable. And we think that we can get this job of negotiations done fairly outside of the time the students are there. The plan would be to negotiate during the first summer of the negotiation cycle. And if you don't have a settlement by the end of the summer, to go into a hiatus and wait till the second summer. And at the second summer, attempt to have the negotiations concluded. If they're not concluded, have both sides then move towards a binding arbitration to come to resolution of whatever differences they have. We think that this would be a professional way of doing it. We think that it would remove any kind of tension from the school teaching day in the school year, and it would be a positive change for our schools and for our teachers. And I think we would still come up with settlements that are fair. I don't think it would necessarily change the balance of who, quote, wins or loses in the negotiation. It simply changes the process. I would stand for any questions you might have.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, this time some questions directly for the witness. A couple questions, Mr. Kite, if I might. Now, you indicated that it sounds like the problem is smaller versus larger districts, and that's what you addressed. Is that...
Mr. Kite.
Is that a fair paraphrase?
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, members of the committee, in general, yes. There are times when there are great tensions in large districts as well, and there's times in small districts when things settle very amicably.
Okay.
But overall, the process of negotiation is closer to the people who work in the school and serve on the boards in those middle-sized to smaller districts.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
my line of questions are, whether or not this legislation would need a distinction between the districts. And if that were the case, what's the dividing line? Is it a district of under 10,000 students? I mean, what's the demarcation that you're thinking of?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry, Senator Cohen, members of the committee. We don't see a demarcation. We think that this would just simply be a better process overall, irregardless of the size of the district. I was referring to kind of the frequency of the occurrence of tensions earlier in my testimony.
And, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Kite, how many strikes have there been, teacher strikes, in the last decade?
Mr. Kite.
State.
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, members of the committee. I don't know the exact number. In the last decade, I'll hazard a guess and say half a dozen. I'm not quite sure I can remember exactly. I can remember very distinctly becoming involved personally, as along with representatives of Education Minnesota, of trying to resolve the very nasty strike in Crosby-Ironton, another one up in International Falls, and those are two that I just bring forward as a recall.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
Mr. Cuttack, that would make your point. If you were talking about International Falls and Crosby-Ireton, we're talking about smaller districts where some of those problems you're suggesting might have been easily exacerbated, I'm guessing. The strikes, if you have the ability to, and possibly you're the best historian we have here, if you have the ability to look over the history of teacher strikes since this right was implemented, do the strikes tend to take place at a time of easy money, you know, surpluses, less economic stress? Do the strikes take place when teachers might find themselves financially under more pressure, or is there no real correlation?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, members of the committee, I'm thinking back over about 30 years now, and I'm not sure there's a correlation. Frankly, it's getting harder for me to remember times when there was more than enough money to get things done. But that said, I think often the problem of the occasional strike that happens is often reduced down to almost down to personalities and one side or another digging in very, very deeply, or that they simply can't figure out a way to come to a creative solution. I'll just simply make the comment about the Crosby-Ironton strike, which was a terrible strike. In the end, the solution had no change in money, simply a change in the way the business was done, and had an arbitrator been able to look at that, I think they could have resolved that without ever getting to that point.
So Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
So Mr. Kite, again, you're making the point that in a smaller district where you had maybe the less access to arbitrators at the front end, or there was more of a distance where you had, say, a larger union negotiating with a school board with significant staff, let's take my district, St. Paul, as an example, that in a smaller district, it becomes very difficult for a smaller community, more easily personalized because everybody knows each other. And so I can appreciate that, but where you suggest that there have only been six strikes in the last decade, I mean, does this then lend itself to being more of a solution in search of the problem?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, members of the committee, I think we're dwelling a little bit too much on the issue of a strike. There are many times when there's significant tension between the parties in these negotiations, well shy of a strike. And we believe that taking that tension away from the school year where students might be affected, and secondly, finding a more, I'll say professional, but maybe that's not the right word, way of resolving any remaining differences in the end seems to be a better way of doing business. Now, I'll further say this, is that the methodology of arbitration is widely used across the country and as close to us as in Iowa. This is the way they resolve a difference when they get to the end of a negotiation and don't have agreement.
Mr. Chairman.
I would have to agree as a parent and a grandparent that I would much rather help find ways to release the burdens in a classroom for a teacher to do what they do best, and that's teach. And so I would have to agree with your comment. Senator Gazelka?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make one including comment, if
okay.
I might.
All right. Senator
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kite, that being the case, and you suggested that maybe I was, I don't know, but inappropriately referencing Section 3, obviously, to be fair, that's what's drawn a lot of attention to Senator Hand's bill. Maybe there's a middle ground to accomplish what you'd like to accomplish without taking away that particular right. So I don't know if there's a way to do it, but just make that suggestion.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I had Crosby in my district. That was 2005 when they had their strike, and I was in the other house, the lower body, so to speak. But I've got to tell you, it was dramatic, and it certainly was not about the children. They were like a pawn in the middle of this chess match, and they suffered greatly. and arbitration would have been far, far better. But that strike was 2 months long. I think it started somewhere in early February and went to early April. Their basketball teams were contending for an opportunity to play in the state. The girls' team, I believe, had to forfeit. The boys' team didn't have a coach, and eventually they lost prematurely, if I remember that correctly. But it was absolutely terrible, and it was over real issues. The teachers that wanted to retire between 55 and 65 had very benefit-rich health package. And so in the end, the school was in statutory operating, whatever they call it, shortfall. And they couldn't afford to pay that, nor did they want to, nor did most schools even have what they had. And so they had no choice but to not go that way. And so I just got to say I'm pleased, Senator Hand, that you're bringing this forward. I know it takes courage. This is not about penalizing the teachers in the end. It's about what's best for the children. And clearly this is not best for the children. They can never get back that 2 months that they lost. They ended up graduating at the normal time. Never got that 2 months of education, and that's wrong.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Kite. It seems to me that this discussion is kind of operating on a false premise that if there are few strikes, then the ability to strike doesn't have a very dramatic impact upon negotiations. It seems to me that the threat of a strike, Mr. Kite, is the issue that puts pressure on boards, on administrators, on taxpayers to get a deal done to avoid the very circumstance that Senator Gazelka has alluded to here. Is that a fair characterization?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry, Senator Thompson, members of the committee, I've always thought that the strike card was a card better held than played. So there is some threat. And yet the bill that we're bringing forward isn't so much, again, it is not so much about trying to avoid a strike or a threat of strike. It's trying to avoid the acrimony that goes with this process, turn it into a little bit more of a civilized process, find a third party to essentially settle a dispute if there's a dispute in the end.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kite, I didn't see you here a couple of weeks ago when Senator Thompson had his bill that basically froze salaries but left a little loophole for superintendents. I'm wondering if, first of all, if you, and I'm sure you do, understand that teachers start with a starting salary of $26,000 to $28,000 a year. And, of course, with the freeze and the years that they have agreed to not taking an increase, they can stay at that rate for a long, long time. Yet we have superintendents that make up to $250,000, and that list is 2 years old. So how do you justify this difference and this attack on the teachers by the people that make five, six, seven, eight times as much as they do?
Senator Perry and Senator Goodwin, members of the committee. First of all, you had several things there. First of all, we never felt in the bill by Senator Thompson that there was a loophole, and I can tell you that both on legal and moral grounds, if that idea ever came to fruition, there would be no superintendent in the state taking any salary change either if that's what happened. So I'll just say that. Secondly, we also don't view this bill, although I understand others might, but we do not view this bill as an attack on teachers. We view this bill as a way of coming to a better negotiation process that will allow things to be done, the negotiations to be done outside of the time when it would have an effect on students and having a reasonable way of coming to a settlement of a dispute if that's even needed. So I know some will view this as an attack. We don't view this as attack. We view this as a reform that ultimately will get you about the same level of settlements as you would have under the present format, but be done a little bit more civilly.
One final
just
question.
Just a moment. A very good senator here reminded me last week of me not coming forward when there is certain adjectives used that are like nails, and I would
thank him, because I believe we're walking pretty close when we start saying we're attacking people. And I just soon stay away from that kind of verbiage and keep this emotionless but straightforward. We're looking at the facts, and I want questions answered. And I'd like to stay away from that frame of questioning on both sides. So go ahead, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kite, I'm wondering why in this bill there isn't any provision that says that superintendents can only negotiate their salaries during the summertime with the school board, and perhaps maybe a limit on mileage and travel and things like that superintendents takes. But my main question is why doesn't this bill cover the negotiation between superintendents, other administrators, and the school board?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry, Senator Goodwin, members of the committee. There are several different methodologies and laws that come into play here. The PELRA bill, as it speaks to teachers specifically, is what we're addressing here. There's also a PELRA law that addresses how principals will negotiate, and that is one of them being essential employees. There's a third law that specifically makes superintendents at-will employees, so that at any the end of any three-year period, majority of the board would say, we don't want that person to serve anymore, that person can't serve. And the negotiations, at least in my knowledge, with superintendents, tend not to be a drawn-out affair. It tends to be a much shorter duration of time. It actually does usually take place during the summer months, but not always.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kite, I'm curious about this notion that somehow or another this bill is going to bring down tension between teachers and administrators. And another point, which is that you made, which is somehow or another, when we suspend the negotiations under the current operating framework, if negotiations continue even during the school year, somehow kids are being affected. So to my first question, isn't it easy to imagine that this tension that you describe could persist even during the school year, even if the negotiations have been suspended for that school year, if there's a perception on one or the other party's part that folks just aren't coming to the table in good faith? I mean, I don't understand how the tension, and help me understand, maybe I'm just not getting it, maybe I don't understand enough how the dynamic of negotiations with teachers' contracts work. But things are suspended, they've been left kind of in a bad light, and everyone has to put a cork in it and wait a number of months until the following summer to pick up the thread again.
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry and Senator Dibble, members of the committee. When Senator Hahn introduced this bill a few minutes ago, he suggested one change in language. He changed the word may to must, because we came to recognize that the way the bill was originally written, it could be possible for a school board to say, well, we're just not going to negotiate with you. And we didn't think that was an appropriate way for us to proceed. By changing the word to must, you must enter into negotiations. So that's the first point of my part of my answer. The second part is that certainly there can be some feelings carried over from one summer to the next. I would not even try to suggest that wouldn't happen. On the other hand, here's what often happens in a school district. The negotiations take place maybe once a month. Let's just say on a Tuesday night, Tuesday evening, afternoon and evening. The next morning, the subject of conversation, be it being positive or irritated, goes on in the faculty rooms, the administrative offices, all throughout the district. And then that gets repeated over and over and over again each time you negotiate. So that tension kind of gets renewed, as opposed to under this suggestion being set aside for a period of time. Now, I'm not suggesting that all feelings would go away. But we're hopeful that if this would become adopted, that there just wouldn't be the level of tension and anger and angst by either side during the school year.
Senator Dibble.
So saying, even if there is tension, whether that's a function of the tension that's kind of drawn out because no one gets to talk to each other for the school year, or tension because, you know, negotiations are ongoing, isn't it entirely conceivable that teachers are professionals and can carry on with their duties in a professional fashion and not bring that tension into their classrooms? I recall, for example, when I went to Apple Valley High School, graduated 83 with Senator Gerlach, by the way. He hates when I tell people that.
I didn't realize you were younger than I was.
just a mere baby here. You know, there it turns out there was a serious contract dispute, which I was completely oblivious to. I think kids, for the most part, really don't care. They go on with their lives. I think it might be possible, and I wonder if you agree, that teachers can just carry on and act in a professional manner. That's my first question. I'll ask my another question. If school boards, and it says school boards, then must, you know, if we don't succeed by the end of the second summer, must submit to an arbitrator selected by the Bureau of Mediation Services, who then determines the final total package. Is it conceivable that there might, if folks really don't need to be grown up and responsible and come to the table in good faith and negotiate and solve their problems among themselves, they just have someone else they can just reach to and solve the problem for them. Doesn't that take away some of the impetus to really come to the table and negotiate a good agreement, and perhaps might give folks of either side, you know, an impetus to just kind of hold back and lowball their offers?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry and Senator Dibble, members of the committee, I'm losing a little bit of the first part of the question, so I hope I hit it right.
You just rely on teachers to be professional and act like grown-ups and do their job?
Senator Dibble.
Professionals they are, not affect the kids. That's part of the centerpiece of your argument for this bill, is all this tension and the effect on kids.
Senator Dibble, I think your statement is both right and wrong. There are many times that both teachers and administrators handle these negotiations in a quite a professional manner. But every single year, when you look across the state, there are numerous examples also of where it does become an angry discussion. And it changes from year to year in school districts. Just sharing without going on too long, I was a teacher union president and negotiator for a period of time and negotiated 6 contracts for teachers and then spent 20 years as a superintendent negotiating for management. There were times in both of those roles where I would kind of characterize the negotiations as being peaceful and very positive. There were times in both of those occasions when it was pretty angry and bitter, and I think pretty much every negotiator who's done this for a long time could reflect on both of those extremes. The other part of your question had to do with, would the parties hold back because of this arbitration?
Mr. Kite, so you're saying when it gets angry and bitter, those teachers are going to drag that anger and bitterness into the classroom and provide a lower quality teaching environment for kids. That's what you're saying.
Senator Dibble, I think you're putting more words in my mouth than I would hope you would. I think that both sides have the potential to do that.
I'm not trying to address
it as coming from one side or the other.
Senator Gazelka would like to respond to that point.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, just having this fairly fresh 2005 in Crosby, that's exactly what happened. And I won't say it was just the teachers or just the school board. It was both. And it was because the impasse was so great. And the teachers would often be spilling that out into their regular classroom as they were coming up to the strike. And so the children would be going home frustrated at what was happening to the teachers. And so then the parents would be upset because there might be another side of it. And it was just, it was terrible. And I come back to the original premise that children should not be in the middle of that. And so if we had it off at a different time in the summer and there was good arbitration, the kids, what I would say in the end happened is the children had less respect for all adults involved. And I don't think that's what we want.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
That was admittedly an extraordinary circumstance where, I think it went to a strike, which is an unusual and rare circumstance in this state. This seems to be pretty strong medicine for some situations that have been fairly unusual. And I think I submit even if we pass this bill, there will be times when things get pretty protracted and pretty heated. This is not a solution, and that's Mr. Kite's argument, that this is going to create harmony and relieve tension between the parties. I don't see it.
Senator Perry and Senator Dibble, I don't think it's going to create total harmony, but I think overall it will reduce the level of tension and bring the level on all sides of professionalism up a notch. And I think overall our schools, our students, and the people who work in our schools all will benefit from that.
Thank you, Mr. Kite. Is there anybody else
Mr. Chairman,
looking to testify in the affirmative?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one quick question for Mr. Kite before he leaves.
Senator Cohen, sure.
Just very quickly. Mr. Kite, you indicated, because I missed Senator Hand's opening comments, that this is a bill presented by your association. Is that correct?
Mr. Kite?
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, it is.
Senator Cohen?
So I just want to inquire as to the process. So is there an executive committee that is in support of it, or the entire membership, or how does that work in terms of the association saying they support something?
Mr. Kite?
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, two stages. Last summer, well before any of your elections took place, about 25 superintendents from across the state came together for a day, and we discussed a whole number of areas in which we thought we could help, we could create some changes that would help our schools work better. Whole range of these things. This was one of those. We then brought that back in the fall to our legislative committee, which is made up of about 120 of our members, and wide-ranging from across the state. And it was only those ideas that we thought had broad recognition of being worthy that we brought forward. And this year we're bringing two or three of those ideas forward this year.
And thank you.
Mr. Chairman, because I
Senator Cohen?
Just because I forget, how many members total in the association?
Mr. Kite?
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, there's about 500 members. There's
Thanks.
About 340 school superintendents, and then about another 150, some assistant superintendents, special ed directors, and a few college professors.
Thank you very much. I didn't see Senator Wigger. So, Mr. Kite, before you leave, Senator Wigger had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few questions. First, Mr. Kite, would you agree that, in addition to a parent, the biggest impact on a student's success would be the classroom teacher?
Mr. Kite?
Senator Wigger, absolutely. The teacher working with the students inside the school is the core linkage.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kite, would you
Senator Wigger,
would you agree that with 50% turnover or so in public school teachers, the 50,000 plus in Minnesota during the next decade, that it's critical for our future economy and the success that we hire the best and brightest teachers we can?
Mr. Kite?
Senator Wigger, I agree with you.
Senator
Mr.
Wigger?
Chair, Mr. Kite, do you believe that this proposal before us will enhance in that recruitment effort where you would in fact limit the ability in amount of salary in some instances, perhaps not treating these people as professionals? Or maybe I'm stating my opinion here, but do you think that this is going to appeal to attracting the best and brightest into the classroom?
Mr. Kite.
Senator Wieger and members of the committee, I don't think this particular idea is going to change that balance in any great way. I will say this, though. I'm given the opportunity to be a guest lecturer at a number of colleges, specifically to seniors graduating that are planning to become teachers. And as I meet with them and talk to them, many of them are somewhat disheartened even before they get into the field to see what they see as a wide range of tensions inside the school. Not specifically on this issue, but that's troublesome to them. They want to be able to be hired, do their best job, have positive reinforcement both from their mentor teachers and their administrators, and work hard but also have a good time doing it. That's what I hear from a lot of the young teachers, and I probably meet with several hundred of them a year.
Senator Wieger.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure that's the case, but I believe that that student also wants to be able to pay off that student loan if there is one. They want to be able to buy a house, et cetera. I'm still reminded, though, and Senator Goodwin brought up the point regarding earlier advocacy by your organization in the name of fairness, that we had to lift the cap on reimbursement for superintendents. And I believe the argument was it's not fair, we're not competitive, we're not going to get the best and the brightest, something that you stipulated we need to do for teachers. The legislature agreed with that. And since that, the salaries have nearly doubled in some cases. I just point that out, and I think there's a bit of inconsistency, to put it lightly, in terms of how we're viewing different parts of the educational team.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Senator Wieger kind of picked this as well as Senator Goodwin, but Mr. Kite, could you, having been a negotiator, and knowing that most of the negotiators tend to be more senior members, particularly on the teaching side, what are the dynamics of determining the entry level salaries? I mean, it seems to me they've been kept artificially low, and you can see why people looking at that and the ways in which the structure of advancement on the salary schedule is determined. I can understand why people would be discouraged as to how they're going to pay off their loans. What are the dynamics that go on there? Are there real strong efforts to look after the new ones coming in, or is it something different than that?
Mr. Kite,
Senator Perry, Senator Olson, members of the committee, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that. First of all, beginning teacher salaries are too low. They're not quite as low as was stated earlier here. They're in the middle 30,000 range. That's nevertheless, it's too low. And much of the money that goes into the settlements, at least in the last few years, has gone into two specific areas. One is moving middle-level teachers from that lower rank up to the higher paid ranks. Actually, the top paid teachers have not fared very well. Their salaries are higher, but they've been fairly static. And the lower paid teachers, we haven't moved those salaries up as much as I think everybody would agree we should. And the second place where much of the money has gone is to try to keep up with the cost of increasing health insurance. So, yes, we should be finding ways to have our beginning people paid more. It's a matter of money and enough money.
Okay, I'm sure this will be vetted out even further in education. Is there another testifier in support of Senate File 208? If so, please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And we are here to support Senate File 208, and we thank Senator Hand for bringing the bill forward. I'd like to back up, Mr. Chairman and members, because I think we've lost a little context. primary reason that my membership is supporting this because we don't think the current system works well. And just to refresh some of your memories, and some of you maybe don't serve on the education committee, so you may not be quite as familiar with this, but under the current system, we have in place a January 15th deadline. If a contract agreement is not reached by that date, then school districts are penalized $25 per pupil. That means $25 per pupil in resources are removed from that school district and sent back to the state general fund. This last go-around, I had four of my member districts that were hit with that penalty. That meant $800,000 in Minneapolis that does not stay in the district to help student achievement. The number was $230,000 in Edina, $250,000 in St. Cloud, and then Intermediate District 287 was also hit, and they get hit to a lesser extent than regular school districts because of the funding formula. Mr. Chairman, members, we fail to see the logic of a system that penalizes students when the adults don't get the job done, and that's what we have in place right now. So we think this is a system that would be an improvement over the current system.
Excuse me. What bill are we on? I don't remember a deadline in this particular bill, so can we speak to the bill?
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, there is in Section 5 a repealer which repeals the January 15th deadline.
That was already done, I thought, in a bill that came before us before and passed.
Mr. Chairman and members, and as Senator Hand pointed out, this bill does repeal the January 15th deadline, and in its place is this binding arbitration process.
Continue.
When we have argued before for the repeal of January 15th, we have been told that, well, you need to have a deadline in place, though otherwise you're going to have these contract negotiations go on forever. Well, we tend to agree with that. And so we think Senator Hand's approach here is to move that deadline up to September 1st and to not have distractions during the school year. And when you do reach an impasse, then have both sides submit to binding arbitration is a lot better system than the current one. We think that the vast majority of contracts will be settled through the collective bargaining process. The current system that we have in place for school principals operates under these conditions right now. I think the last time that the principals went to arbitration was about once in the last 5 years, I think, has happened. To the notion that somehow we're devaluing teachers, if we go this route, I would just ask this question. Does that mean that we as a state don't value our peace officers, our firefighters, our EMT workers, the other employees that operate under this system? And if so, I'm wondering why we haven't seen legislation that would remove those employees from that group so they're not operating under this system. We think, Mr. Chairman, in fact, that the system does work. It can work very well, and we think it can work for our teachers as well. So I'll leave it at
Thank
that.
You,
Thank you,
Mr. Frumquist. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I don't think anyone is going to die if a teacher doesn't come to school on our particular day. Clearly, there's a purpose for determining employees who are essential. I think you insult our intelligence by creating that metaphor and that parallel. Well,
Mr. Chairman and members, our school principals come under that law right now.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kuhnquist, I was a member of your organization up until January 1st of this year, and I don't remember this issue being on your legislative agenda at all, and I don't remember ever being asked as a school board member what I would like to have on the legislative agenda, nor do I remember any of the other folks on the school board in the district I was in being asked. Where did it suddenly pop up? How did this suddenly happen? It's not on your legislative agenda. I haven't seen Mr. Kite's legislative agenda for this year before this all happened, but I'd really like to know, when did this suddenly come up on your agenda?
Mr. Kronquist.
Mr. Chairman, committee member, Senator Goodwin, in fact, this is on our legislative platform, and that was developed starting last June. We send surveys out to all of our member districts, our school board members, our superintendents, other school staff. We have a legislative committee that's in charge of developing the legislative platform. It gets forwarded to the full board for a couple of different looks at it, and the full board did approve our legislative platform.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kuhnquist, as in the previous testimony from Mr. Kite, he talked about how there's this once a month
typically meeting, for the purpose of negotiations throughout the negotiation period. And then, the result of that conversation is the subject of water cooler conversations and break room conversations and the like, which actually brings up a practical question, which is how will the collective bargaining unit, the teachers union, how will they communicate in a practical way back, and keep that kind of open line of communication open, so there's some transparency and some iteration, some feedback, so folks are being kept informed in a real practical manner and a real-time basis with kind of the ebb and flow in the process of the negotiations, so that they have some way of ascertaining that they're kind of moving in the right direction. If we're doing this just during the summer months when a lot of teachers are, on their family vacations or doing something else.
Mr. Kronquist.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, and you raised a good point. I mean, I think one of the reasons that January 15th was on the books for so long was that it really did used to be the case where you'd come to the summer and things would really shut down in the schools, and there just wasn't a lot of communication, and so the argument was we needed to have time in the fall to be able to resume and carry out the negotiations. But, that really was in the days before the internet and before email, and, the reality is in today's world, you're able to keep people abreast of what's going on, with the click of a mouse, and so we really don't think that'll be a problem.
Any other testifiers in support of Senate File 208? Do we have any testifiers in the negative? Ms. Allswager from Education Minnesota? Did you want, I have a handout here. Is that something that?
Mr. Chairman, it's Committee Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. Yes, you can go ahead and distribute the handout. I would like to turn it over, though, to the president of one of the teachers' unions, Jim Smola, if that's possible now.
You state your name and spell the last for us, please.
My name is Jim Smola, S-M-O-L-A.
Thank you.
And I'm the president of the Dakota County United Educators, representing the teachers and nurses of Independent School District 196.
Thank you, sir.
I would like to, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding this bill today. This bill is an intrusion on local control and will undermine years of union and district collaboration and collective bargaining. For over 20 years, our union, school board, and district administration of 196 has worked collaboratively using interest-based bargaining to effectively arrive at solutions to issues raised by both parties during negotiations. Many years ago, the district administration, school board, and union leadership recognized the importance of using the collective bargaining process to solve problems and create an atmosphere of continuous dialogue on all matters. This bill puts artificial barriers on the process that are almost humanly impossible to meet. To use our process as an example, over the years, both parties set goals of trying to complete bargaining by the start of the school year or shortly thereafter. Using inter-based bargaining, we start the process in mid to late May, close to when the legislature has completed its work and work through the summer. More often than not, we finish the majority of work during the summer, but still need time in the fall to finalize the details and have both parties ratify the agreement. Using interest-based bargaining, as we have done, requires more time to complete the process. Reason being, we need a quorum to conduct a meeting, which in our case means a school board member, certain district administrators, and certain union negotiators. As with everyone, summer schedules have an impact on who is available when. We also include time for subcommittee work, where members from both teams meet to identify possible solutions to an issue. This takes time. We jointly work on our meeting schedules to allow for subcommittee work with maximum participation from both teams and data gathering. To require that this process must be complete prior to school starting or carry over the following summer is problematic. It will put artificial stress on a process that works for us, create morale problems and draw out a process that, in our experience, has been completed to the district, the employees, and the community in a timely and satisfactory manner. Enacting this bill will not improve the education of one child in our district, and I believe not one child in Minnesota. As a person who worked in the private sector before becoming a teacher and now teaching for over 30 years, I understand the importance of morale in the workplace. When you read about the best companies in America to work for, people take pride in where they are employed and look forward to going to work. I believe this bill will serve to undermine morale by artificially dragging out or stalling the negotiations process. For those of us in ISD 196, this bill would damage a process we have created that has been effective in jointly and collaboratively arriving at solutions to issues both sides have identified. As I mentioned earlier in my remarks, I believe this bill is an intrusion in our local control, and it has nothing to do with improving the quality of education for students. It will create artificial barriers to a process that we have jointly established. I thank you for the opportunity to address your committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Smolin. Any questions? Salzweiger?
Mr. Chair, members, I think I will offer my testimony in three kind of areas. One, I would like to review the January 15th contract settlement deadline and share with you how it is working. Second, talk to you about the problems with this bill. And third, offer a solution for you. Without question, this bill strips teachers of collective bargaining rights as they know them. January 15th contract settlement deadline. You have a document in front of you. This document shows you how successful the current January 15th deadline is working. We heard a lot of discussion about strikes. You want to get rid of strikes? Keep the January 15th contract settlement deadline. In this graph, every year where the bar is low, indicating all the number of locals that did not settle by, that were unsettled, you can see that people are getting the job done when there's a January 15th contract settlement deadline. Only 3.59% were not settled. In 1999, 2001, only 1.5% of the districts were not settled. And you ask about strikes. When were the strikes? Take a look at the high bar graphs. When you take away the January 15th contract settlement deadline, and you did that for three rounds of bargaining, those were the only years in the last 17 years that we have had strikes. Three strikes out of 17 years, over 300 districts. That is a 99.9% success rate. What is the problem? I don't believe I heard a problem really articulated.
Ms. Salzweiger, I just have a quick question here. We had a couple of folks ask about copies. Did you bring enough for the... Anyone in the audience? We didn't get this early enough to get that done.
Mr. Chair, I brought what I had in the office, and I can certainly provide more copies to the committee administrator if others would like to have them. Right. But I got enough for the committee and for staff.
Okay. All right. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to have a copy of this, give me a quick show of hands, and we'll make sure we get maybe a dozen of them would work. Thank you very much.
So I've just been talking about the third document in this packet, which shows you the number of strikes, and we don't like strikes either. Then I want you to look at the second document, because sometimes people will say, well, you know, that January 15th settlement deadline gives those teachers too much leverage, because by the time January 15th contract settlement deadline comes up, those poor school board members feel like they have to cave to the teachers. Well, let me give you some reality. Take a look at the percentages. To read this document, The second column is the first year of the contract, and the third column is the second year of the contract. And this document gives you the percentage increase of the negotiations, of the settlement, in September 1st, October, November, December, January, January 15th. These are cumulative figures, and you can see in every instance the number, the percentage goes down. You might say, why would Education Minnesota want a January 15th contract settlement deadline? Because the salaries are actually going down, the percentages, as you get closer to the 15th. Why? Because deadlines work. It forces both parties to come to the table with a realistic offer, the school board and the teachers. It also helps us concentrate on education, which is the most important task that we have before us. You've heard about, of course, the wage freeze bill that has been in the Senate. Actually, in another body, the Bush Foundation answered a question about the wage freeze because we think that this would have very similar effect about attracting and retaining teachers. They felt that the wage freeze would have would be a problem for attracting and retaining teachers. We believe this bill would as well. We also know that there are a number of superintendents that did not support the wage freeze. And I have to ask you, talk to your own superintendent. Ask them if they want the state to tell them that they can't bargain during the school year. So this bill would implement a state mandate and tell school districts when they could and could not bargain. We also wonder, again, what is the problem? Salaries. I know Mr. Kite talked a lot about rural districts. Are you aware that we have some districts where the highest paid teacher barely makes $40,000? Is that okay? This bill would make it even more difficult in situations where obviously, a district does not want to increase teachers' salaries. This school board would have a lot of authority, a lot of leverage to say, no, we want to go to binding arbitration. We believe that the teachers...
Salzweiger? Senator Gazelka had a question on something that you had said. So
thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Gazelka.
Chair and Ms. Salzweiger. I appreciate what you do, and my position is not to be against teachers. I'm really focused on what's best for the children, and you mentioned writing a letter to the superintendents on the wage freeze. I did do that to nine of them and all school board members, and not one school district superintendent wrote a letter against it, and only one school board member out of somewhere around 60 was against it. But also the January 15th, maybe it's just my area. I mentioned Crosby already. I'm not going there. You know, but Brainerd had that issue in 2010 coming up to the January 15th deadline. And because they couldn't settle, it cost them $200,000, which ends up getting taken out of their budget, which affects the dollars that go back to the classroom. And so, you know, I just have too many real examples for me to be comfortable with some of the things you're talking about.
Ms. Salzweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and you're taking me right to the problems of the bill, so thank you. It's a great segue. I think Mr. Kite actually mentioned that personalities are sometimes one of the biggest stumbling blocks in trying to get an agreement. And that may or may not have been the case in Crosby-Ironton. I'm not going to testify to that. But this bill does nothing to change that issue about personalities and people's willingness to negotiate a contract. And we don't like to see a strike. We don't like to see a penalty for January 15th. But we also know that, according to the figures that I shared with you, that it does force people to get the job done, just like you have deadlines. You know what your committee deadlines are, and you know how the behavior changes as you come up to the committee deadline, the first deadline, the second deadline, the third deadline. You know you have to be done by May 23rd, and you know it works, and it has for teachers as well. And I also want to make a comment about must. You know, we changed the word to must. It doesn't. My comment is, just because they must bargain doesn't mean they will bargain in good faith. And that, again, gets to the personalities. Not everything is going to be perfect. I also want to talk about some of the other problems. Mr. Smola talked about how collaboratively they work in their district. I have witnessed that. Interest-based, they set out problems. They try to figure out creatively, jointly, with their school board, to figure out how to solve those problems. With this bill, you would have to try to get an incredible number of mediations if you were to go to mediation, which the BMS could never, I don't believe, supply the number of mediators in time because you could only use them during the summer. So in many ways, I think you wipe out the possibility of real, true mediation because you've only got 3 months. And the first year of the contract, you know, the budget will probably be signed into law maybe around May 23rd or a few days later, right?
Absolutely.
Hopefully. We hope it's not June. I certainly hope it's not July.
Sure.
But think about that. So let's say you go into special session. Let's say you don't finish your work until July. I know I've been here and some of you have been here when we've been working in July. That means Mr. Small and his union has maybe 6 weeks or 4 weeks to in fact, when did we settle? Maybe we would miss that entire summer. It just isn't reality that we can get this done because we don't even know the numbers from the state. Even if you complete your session May 23rd, a district, a school board, is probably not going to make final decisions about how much money they really have in their district until the end of June because things are interpreted at times.
Ms. Halswiger, I'm going to stop you there. Senator Torres Ray has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is the question actually for the author. Because I know Senator Hahn and I serve in the Education Committee, and I know that you have seen these documents before. So I know that you're very familiar with this testimony and you're very familiar with these statistics. So am I. And I think Ms. Halswiger has brought this to our attention before, and she has asked this question. You know, we've done this. Actually, these bars clearly show the numbers. You know, they really clearly show what is happening with our schedule since 1995. And we've seen this. And so I have to ask you, really, what is the intent behind this proposal, behind your bill? Because we don't have a problem. We don't have a problem. Where we do have a problem, Senator Hahn, I believe, is with an incomplete proposal. I would believe that your intention really is to correct a problem if you would bring to us a proposal that says we're going to pay better salaries so that we don't have to deal with this at the legislature. If your proposal will incorporate a provision that says we're going to pay better salaries and we're going to make absolutely sure that every year we review this so that teachers every year receive better compensation for their work, then this bill actually has the two components that are fair to teachers. Absolutely. What is the reason to strike if we're paying good salaries, if we're treating our teachers well? There is no reason. That's unfair. They are not doing something really that is fair to our community and to the children, right? But you just heard Mr. Kite. He's been, you know, in this system for 35 years, more than that, I think. And he said, no, absolutely. Salaries are too low. And it takes way too long. That's what I heard, for a teacher to get a better salary. It takes a long time. I heard that in Minneapolis, it takes 35 years to get to the top of your scale. 35 years. So I need to ask you, Senator Hahn, what is really the intent of this legislation? I need to hear it from you.
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres Ray, I think that my testimony was clear about the intent, and I think Mr. Kite was here and also talked about the intent. This was a bill that was proposed by the school administrators. I've agreed to carry it in the legislature, and I think the intent is clear, that the structure of bargaining as it is today, we believe, could be reformed, could be made better, and the structure of my bill intends to do that. It doesn't eliminate any deadlines. I accept the idea that having deadlines is important. My bill has a deadline. It says you've got a specific time to reach an agreement, and after such time, if an agreement isn't reached, then there is arbitration that will settle the differences, settle the contract at that time. Makes it very clear. Does not allow for that protracted, lengthy, perhaps leading into even a strike condition. It provides for a way to settle the contract. So I think the intent is clear. I think that there is, you know, the larger question of how do we deal with compensation. I think that is an issue that we're all interested in. Goes far beyond the scope of my bill. I think we'll try to take that up. But the reality is that every school district deals with a limited amount of funds. And that's the question. How do you deal with a limited amount of funds? 80% of your cost is salaries and benefits of employees. And we have a process to settle how those funds are going to be used. And as a practical matter, do administrators, do schools have the ability to manage those funds? We elect local school board members. They are empowered and charged with hiring administrators to act in the public's interest to manage the funds that they have. And the question is, do they have the tools that allow them to do that? I think this is the bill that I have is a structure that allows those people that we elect locally to be empowered, to have a process where there is certainty to it, and it comes to a conclusion that is predictable and final. It doesn't say anything about what is the content of those contracts, what is the contract of those offers that are put on the table that the arbitrators have to determine between. Those things can be as up to the whatever the parties involved in the negotiation decide to put on the table. But what it does do is it brings about a process where there is a structure and a finality, and it doesn't bring into play the potential of shutting schools down as a way of achieving a goal that some of the adults may wish to have at a bargaining table. That is a thing that none of us want to see happen. I think this is a structure that assures that that does not happen.
Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up, please.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Hand, we already have deadlines. I think the teachers have come to us and say we work under deadlines. And here it is. We already have deadlines. And they try very hard to work on this. And I believe that you and I believe that they really try to work hard to complete these contracts. And I think that this notion that we have to impose through legislation on teachers and all of our public employees, the notion of live within your means, your notion is that they are not going to have the right to go to their boards, to go to their directors to say, I deserve to get a little bit more. I think this notion of living within your means that you propose means that if you don't have enough, we need to make sure that no one around our community has enough. It is not good for us as a society to work to make sure that we all have enough, that you have a decent salary. What I'm going to be sure that we do, I think is what you're proposing, is that if I don't have it, you don't have it, that none of us have it. And I think I have a problem with that, Senator Hamm. I want to make sure that we propose decent salaries for teachers. They are very important. Teaching to our kids is the most important thing we do in our society. Just to say today that a teacher could start working in a district for $25,000, and that because we don't have any money to pay, they should stay there. And so that everybody now should share the sacrifice, and everybody should make $25,000, I believe that is really wrong. I think we're going to lose a lot of teachers. I think talented people are not going to want to come to work in this field, and I think that's what you're proposing.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Live within our means. That means that we're not going to pay decent salaries to our teachers.
Senator
Torres-Ray.
And I believe
that's the intent.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. No, we're not here to be discussing salaries and contracts. What we're here is to be discussing what we see in here, a bill that is moving to establish a new process. And so those discussions, I'm sure, will be coming up elsewhere. I want to move on to Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question that I needed a clarification on with regard to the effective date. I was a little bit confused I realize that only Section 1 and 5 are pushed out. Could we maybe just review that just so I can get my head around the effective date, please? Thank
Senator
you.
Hand, can you do that, please?
Mr. Chairman, I think Section 5 is the repealer of the January 15th deadline, and the effective date is 2013. And Section 1 essentially changing the or defining teachers as non-essential or as essential employees also is effective July 2013. I think that allows for some time for anticipation of a change in structure. And typically, if there's not an effective date, then bills and parts of the bills would be in effect upon enactment.
So,
no,
August, I'm sorry.
August 1st.
So follow up.
July 1st.
August.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. August 1st. I'm being corrected by one of our more experienced members. Senator Olson says August 1st if they're not specified.
All right. So follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we have a contract negotiation coming up, does this bill indicate that they do have a couple years to wait before if this bill were to pass with as amended, to that there's a couple years of sort of getting used to this whole process? Again, I'm still a little unclear as to.
Well, Senator Carlson, as I read it on page 3, line 3.25, the Section 6 effective date, it says Sections 1, 2, 5 are effective beginning July 1st, 2013 and apply to all teacher collective bargaining agreements entered into or modified after that date. Is that what you're looking
for? Mr. Chairman.
Right. So
Senator Hand.
I misspoke, and you're right. I thought it was Sections 1 and 5, 1, 2, 5, all the whole section of the bill, and that would go into effect.
So Senator
Carlson.
So, Mr. Chairman, the scenario that, and I'm sorry I can't pronounce your name, that she presented would not be accurate because we have these couple years of this going into effect. Is that correct? I believe that the testifier was concerned that there was only going to be a couple months to get something done. In fact, we really have a couple years. Is that
correct? Ms. Alzweiger.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I don't think that the effective date has any impact on when you could or could not bargain. My comments were about you'd have very little time during the negotiations time to negotiate. As of July 1st, 2013, you could no longer bargain during the school year. So just what this does is just pushes it out a year and a half or so.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for our testifiers? That's what I'm looking at. If not, we'll release them.
Mr. Chair, I still have a couple of points to make, quick points, and then also my solution at the end.
All right.
Mr. Chair, that's what I was going to ask. I was anxiously waiting the last part of her testimony. I wanted to get to
all right. Good. Let us proceed.
You are in a difficult situation. I don't envy any of you trying to fix the Minnesota budget deficit. But this bill will actually increase your costs. Why? Because when you repeal the January 15th contract settlement deadline, you end up then not getting some of that money back or not paying some of the money with the $25 per pupil penalty. Now, we're not saying we like any district to have that penalty at all. But you do end up, it will cost you something, and it will have to go on your fiscal sheets.
Ms. Alzweiger, if that's the case, explain to me, if we giveth to the school board, we as the legislature giveth, and we take it away because of the January 15th deadline, and say it is, in the case I heard today, $200,000. Where does that $200,000 go? Does it go back into the general fund, hence leaving education?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, in the other body, the fiscal note has been, I'm not exactly sure of the figure. I thought it was about $700,000. Is that correct? Yes, yeah, about $700,000.
Chair, that's correct. $700,000 in our bill as well in the Senate.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Also, we think that school districts might have increased costs in arbitration because of the increased amount of arbitrations. Mediation, probably not so much. So let's go to the solution. What you could do is take the January 15th deadline and move it up. Move it to October 15th. Move it to November 1st if you're concerned about the time that there's discussions on negotiations. Or if you're concerned about when your work at the Capitol is going to be done, make the deadline 90 days after the or 120 days after the legislative session ends so that you have a realistic amount of time. And instead of making districts live with a deadline, teachers and school boards, have a $5 appropriation per pupil for those districts to settle. That would be an incentive. And Senator Torres-Ray is right. I mean, we are struggling to make ends meet. This might be a very good, positive way to focus more on collaboration than confrontation. I'll be happy to answer any other questions you might have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. I believe we're getting close to a time for a vote here. Is there any further discussion? Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, before I forget, I'd like to request a roll call vote. I'd like to make a motion that the roll call be recorded in the Senate Journal.
Senator Dibble.
I think that takes a show of three
hands. I need three hands for that. Seeing four.
All right.
Duly noted and
printed
will
twice.
And, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
A couple questions for the author. First, relative to the previous testimony, I thought Ms. Alswager was, somewhat compelling on this question of the January 15th date with the chart. I don't serve on Senator Olson's committee, so I've not had a chance to see this. But in listening to the testimony and looking at this, and maybe you serve on Senator Olson's committee, so you've already seen this. Is this something that we should? I'm not prepared for an amendment, but is this something we should maybe reconsider in terms of the abolition of that date?
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, the committee can do as it pleases. I'm not going to suggest that to limit what the committee may do. We have heard this issue in the Education Committee, I believe, every year that I've served in the legislature. There have been bills. I've authored a number of them to do away with the January 15th penalty. Every year that we've talked about this, the testimony has uniformly been from school boards and school administrators to get rid of it. And every year the testimony from the representative of the teacher union is to keep it. And the testimony has always been the same. The unions argue that it does no harm, and the administrators and the school boards argue that it is harmful. So I think that as we've talked about this over the years, there has been the same arguments raised. It hasn't gotten any clearer, I guess. I think it's just a matter of a perspective. From my perspective, and one reason I have supported and authored legislation to repeal it, is that coming from a school board, I think that we elect local school board members to manage a school district. We hold them accountable. To penalize one body in a bargaining relationship for failure to reach an agreement doesn't seem appropriate. And that has been the uniform expression of concern that I have heard over the years from school boards and school districts and administrators. So the committee may do as it wishes, but I would not support an amendment to change the structure of the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Hand, is it a question of the January 15th date as opposed to an earlier date as suggested by Ms. Alswager? Is that, again, because I don't serve on K-12, so I don't.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I don't believe it is the date. I think it is the structure of the penalty that is the problem. It is the problem is that you have a date put in law and you require contracts to be settled by that date, and if such a contract is not reached by that date, then one party, the school administration, is penalized for failure to reach an agreement. That's the structure. Moving that date up a month or two would not alleviate the problem, I don't believe.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that Senate File 208, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
As
Mr.
amended.
Chairman.
Senator Thompson moves Senate File 208, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Education.
Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Cohen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, another question I have. Trying to look at the language in the bill, I don't presume to be the expert on collective bargaining around this place, but in Section 3, you have essential employees, then you add, and teachers may not strike. Is the simplest way then just to make teachers essential employees and provide binding arbitration?
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, that's a good question. I have looked at the language and statute that defines essential employees. As I said, this bill was brought to me by the school administrators, and we can certainly invite them to comment on that. My thought was that there were other provisions in the other categories of people who are classified as essential employees that may not apply to teachers. I'm not certain about that.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Could I ask either Mr. Cutter or Mr. Kronquist to testify again? Because this is after, I picked this up after I had listened to their testimony, and I'm just curious if that's the path of least resistance if we're going to go this route. I mean, is there a difference then between a teacher and a, you know, an essential employee?
Was that a
seems
Mr. Botter, I'd like to have you weigh in on that, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, very quickly, there are some significant differences in the structure that's provided for teachers in this bill compared to what essential employees would be provided with. And one of the significant items is the way that essential employees can request interest arbitration through a variety of mechanisms. This bill basically specifies at the end of this separate process that would apply only to school boards and school employees that the arbitrator must use the final offer total package method. So there are some significant distinctions in the way school employees would be treated here.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen.
Without knowing a lot about the subject matter, I understand that just reading the bill. That's why I wonder why we would have those distinctions. If this is what we're going to do, why don't we just make them essential employees and then provide for binding arbitration as we would with other essential employees? So that the distinctions as articulated by Mr. Bodden strike me as not irrelevant, they're not irrelevant in the context of the bill, but in terms of how we're now treating teachers prospectively. So that's what I'm wondering if Mr. Kite might have a comment about that.
Mr. Kite.
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, members of the committee, this particular bill is structured so that there actually is an end. If you're simply an essential employee, the negotiations theoretically could just go on and on and on and on. And unless both sides agreed to an arbitration, it would never end. And our concern, frankly, is we wouldn't want school boards to play that game. We would rather that there would be an end time defined and a requirement to go to arbitration so that we bring the negotiations to conclusion.
And Senator Dibble,
can I just finish this point?
One last? All right, Senator Cohen.
That makes sense, but again, my problem is I don't know much about this. So
dangerous.
Isn't there an ending point with essential employees where they end up at some ending point in binding arbitration?
Mr. Kite.
I don't know. Maybe there's somebody else who could answer that for me.
Senator Perry and Senator Cohen, I would defer to somebody else, but I don't believe so. I think as an essential employee, both sides eventually would have to agree to arbitration. Otherwise, the negotiation just remains open and continues and continues. I could stand to be corrected on that.
Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at Section 179.816, Subdivision 2, which specifies how essential employees enter into binding interest arbitration. Either the exclusive representative or the employer of a unit of essential employees may petition for binding interest arbitration by filing the written request with the other party and the commissioner. And at that point, then, the commissioner shall determine whether further mediation of the dispute would be appropriate and only certifies it where the commissioner believes both parties have made substantial good faith bargaining efforts and then an impasse has occurred.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Cohen is onto something. I guess I'm just giving a little quick little speech against the bill, against the motion that's been made, because Senator Hahn, the bill really does seem to be arrayed against teachers and not an interest in serving the overall system or bringing tension down. It presumes that the bad actors are teachers by its construction. I don't know if I would support classifying teachers essential employees or not, but
certainly the essential employees and their ability to petition into interest-based bargaining. We heard the testimony from District 196, by the way, shout out. That's my alma mater, District 196.
What year was that, Senator?
long time ago, I'm sorry to say. At least brings the parties to the table on an equal footing. This clearly just simply cuts directly against the rights of teachers to their currently existing collective bargaining rights. And that's why we heard of the characterization earlier, which I won't use. But that's what it feels like. You know, it feels like it's the whole construction and thrust of the bill. The testimony that we heard from Mr. Kite presumes teachers to be bad faith actors in this negotiation, not allowing the negotiation to occur around the calendar in a normal fashion, a professional fashion, presuming that teachers are going to be so disheartened by the progress of negotiations that they're going to behave poorly in the classroom and affect students negatively. So that's what this bill feels like. If it were perhaps in a different construction, the type which Mr. Modern just described, maybe, I could open the door a crack and consider the reform, the possibility of this kind of reform.
Thank you for your opinions. On Senator Thompson's motion, I believe we're ready for a roll call. One has been requested.
Mr. Chairman, can we have just a little bit more discussion? I'd like to make a comment. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a comment to supplement Senator Dibble a little bit differently. I have a couple of concerns listening to the debate, and I told myself I'd never lapse into a discussion about the good old days. Okay, but now the good old days. One of the things I think we do around this place a little bit too often, I thought Senator Gazelka's comments were instructive, because it sounds that was a very, very difficult situation, and I can appreciate why Senator Gazelka, representing his district, would like to prevent that kind of a situation from happening again. But I think at times, too often here, we end up legislating from the particular to the general. And that's why, as we listen to the testimony unfold, and I don't want to hook on to Ms. Allswager's testimony again, but where she suggested we've had three strikes. Remember I had asked the question, how many strikes have we had in the last 10 years? She produced some information that says in 17 years, whatever it is, we've had three strikes. So I'm a little bit concerned that we take what was obviously a terrible situation in Senator Gazelka's district and then generalize from it. And so that's a concern, because I haven't quite heard the need for this legislation in the context of this year. The second thing, to be fair, relates to my comments at the outset. I hadn't realized until we'd gone through the bill, in my first read of it, that the effective date is in 2 years. So we can't say that this bill has any impact whatsoever on our budget situation right now. And so in terms of being able to book a number and put a number into the budget, whether it be this budget, Senator Olson's budget, whatever it is, the effective date doesn't allow it. So it kind of begs the question as to what the impact is on this year's budget, or the 12-13 budget. The answer is there is no impact. But wanted to make those couple of comments before we vote.
Renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
Senator Thompson renews his motion. A roll call has been granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Aye.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazelka?
Aye.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Senator Ortman?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
On an 8 ayes and 5 nays, the Senate File 208 prevails and is recommended to pass and will be re-referred to the Committee on Education.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee members.
We will take up now Senate File 650, Senate File 739, and Senate File 146. We will take up at 6 o'clock tonight. So, Senator Gazelka.
Sorry,
Senator Gazelka, please proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, this is a much simpler bill and I think less complicated. Senate File 650 is a problem gambling appropriation, $225,000 fiscal year 2012 and 2013. I will say that this grant has been in place since 2005 for the exact same numbers. The funds come from the Minnesota Lottery Prize Fund. And I've got a couple testifiers. I don't want to take up a lot of time on this other than to say when I was approached to carry this, my interest generated from questions earlier when we were talking about listening to the gambling board, and I had questions related to exactly what kind of impact negatively does gambling have, and so that's why I carried that. And so I guess I would move to Senate File 650.
Senator Gazelka, so moved. And as far as testimony goes, it looks like you have a couple of folks that are ready. If you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Peralt, and I am the the executive director of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. And the North Star Alliance is the Minnesota affiliate to the National Council on Problem Gambling. So we are the direct recipients of this funding. I don't have a lot of things to go over with you, so I'm more than happy to answer questions or simply introduce my colleague.
Madam Chair? Or excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Let's, if we could, let's get the other testimony in, and then we'll open for questions, if that's okay, members.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Don Feeney. Most of you know me as Research and Planning Director for the Minnesota State Lottery. I am also a member of the Board of Directors of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance and the National Council on Problem Gambling. I am just here for questions. I have no prepared testimony.
Thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. Members, questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for each of the testifiers, if you could indicate whether you think it would not or be in the state's interest to expand gambling.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wieger, as the affiliate to the National Council, we do not take a position one way or the other on the expansion or elimination of gambling. We take a neutral position that indicates that as long as there is gambling, there will be some problem gambling, and then our mission is to try to negate that and through education and prevention. So we don't take a position one way or the other on how much the state should or should not be involved.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Peralt. Senator Goodwin and then Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Gazelka, how much currently are we have quite a, I was thinking, and if we don't, we should have quite a bit coming out of the lottery fund now for compulsive gambling treatment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, I can't answer that. When I asked that same question in committee earlier, I didn't get a great answer, but it didn't appear to be very much. But you may have an answer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, the total appropriation in the last biennium for compulsive gambling programs was, I want to say, about $2.25 million, of which $2 million went to the Department of Human Services, who directly provides treatment, and the remaining $250,000 was to the North Star Alliance.
Senator Goodwin.
I just have to follow up on that. So there's $2.4 million going right now for compulsive gambling addiction.
$2.25 million.
And the Department of Human Services also adds money to that pot, don't they?
Mr. Feeney?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, from their appropriation, no. The money comes from the lottery. It is then appropriated to the Department of Human Services specifically for that purpose.
And,
Senator Goodwin?
Mr. Chair, and I want to ask about the North Star Alliance here. What amount of money do you currently get from the state for your programs?
Mr. Feeney?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, it is the same as called for in this bill. That amount has been the same for the last several funding cycles.
So, Mr. Chair, so have we always had to have a separate bill for for dedicate, oh, wow, that's quarter of a million. How many people does your organization serve?
Mr. Feeney? Ms. Perrault?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, it's a little difficult for us to measure exactly because we do not provide direct treatment services. That's all done through the Department of Human Services. We can measure the number of people that have gone through treatment. The work of the North Star Alliance is on the prevention and education and training area. So we do a lot of community outreach, trying to help establish people to understand problem gambling, to take action if they have concerns about themselves or someone else. To be able to say that we can measure exactly the number of people is we're measuring things that didn't happen. In other words, if 20 people, you know, get prevented from having problems, we don't know that. But all our work goes into that area.
Mr. Chair, just one more question.
Senator Goodwin.
How do we measure the amount of money? How do we measure if this is helpful? It's like a second or third party here that's getting down the line with not direct treatment, your organization is, and that kind of concerns me, when, especially when we have a money shortfall, that we're not using this for direct treatment. We're using this for education, and I know there's a lot of people with problems out there. So how do we measure your success? How do we know what's happened with the money that you've been given? I see there's a number of good organizations that are part of your group, and they also get funding through a number of other sources for a number of other programs. And I think that's something we do have to look at as far as reform, is where is the money going to all these different second or third party groups for what different services? So how do we measure quality in your case or success?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, that's an excellent question and one we're wrestling with a bit on our own. The North Star Alliance has not been around a long time. It's been 8 years or 9 years, I believe. And in the last couple of years, we've gone through a fairly significant transition of leadership. Some of the things that we do measure are our ability to reach audiences through the communication channels that we use. We do some promotion on the 800 number for the state's problem gambling helpline. We can help direct traffic towards that through our funding. We have a website, an information website. We can track, and we do track the value and the number of people and the number of hits, so to speak, that we are getting on that material. We have 12, right now, about 12 professionals who are a part of our speakers network, and they will go out to any community around the state of Minnesota and speak to community groups, whether it be schools or, Lions clubs, community organizations, on the topic of problem gambling. We get feedback from the people who come to our conference every spring. So we've got a number of these kinds of things that are giving us some level of statistics. Ultimately, in the long term, I think from a standpoint of what we would love to see, we would like to see growth in the number of people that actually come forward for treatment earlier in the process. And after that, we would like to see a drop in the need for all of that. So I think we do have we're planning to do a research project shortly that will measure some general attitudes and awareness around the state towards problem gambling. Our hope would be that every other year or every 2 years we are able to remeasure that to see what kind of influence we've had.
Members, I'm just going to interject two items here, and that is, just to clarify, this bill is going to be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill, just so folks know that. And the other is to see if there are any folks in the audience who would like to testify either in favor or in opposition to this bill. I see one. You could approach. State your name for the record, if you could, please.
My name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and I wanted to speak in support of this bill. I think gambling addiction is a very real and significant problem. I don't think we realize, frankly, how significant it is, and I think it's important that the legislature address it. I think it was highlighted just recently by news stories last week that a former auditor at the Department of Revenue had defrauded the state $1.9 million to pay to fund her gambling addictions. So I think that's just the tip of the iceberg. A couple other points, and then I'll just conclude, is there was a study out of Wisconsin, Council on Problem Gambling, found that the average gambling debt of the over 14,000 people who called a helpline was over $44,000 a person. And that's just a portion of gambling people who have problems with addiction. It's estimated 2 out of 3 compulsive gamblers did something illegal to obtain money to feed their addiction. And I've seen numbers that 20% of addicted gamblers have made actual suicide attempts. No other addictive population has as high a prevalence of suicide attempts. And just the social costs are enormous, so I think this it's very appropriate to utilize some of the money that's gained from gambling to address the problems, the significant fallout. So I want to testify in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Any other? Senator Lilly.
Chairman Peery, I guess I'd like a little help following the money. Where is the money coming from? Where is it going? How is this being utilized? So it's coming from the lottery prize fund. Could we explain a little bit more about what that is and how this all will work?
Mr. Feeney?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lilly. The lottery prize fund essentially is the money that we set aside to pay winners of the lottery. That fund, the amount, of course, varies depending on the amount of winners we would have in any given year. It is, I want to say, about $280 million. So in this instance, we are talking about 1/10 of 1%, less than 1/10 of 1% of that amount. Small amounts to that effect, we can adjust prize payouts to have no impact on revenues. Larger amounts, very much. Yes, we know that prizes need to be paid at an adequate level for people to continue to play. It has historically been the source of funding for all of the problem gambling programs going back 20 years through the Department of Human Services. That's essentially the funding mechanism that was identified and used at the point that the lottery was created, and it was determined to be a convenient place to find the funds.
Thank you.
Any further Chairman, discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I could clarify one point. For Senator Goodwin, you asked about the money. The allocation that comes to the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance as a nonprofit entity is used for printing, for distribution of material, for research, for general communication, for paying speakers to go speak to community groups. So that is the operating budget, a significant portion of it, for the North Star Gambling Alliance, and that's where those funds go to.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
To that answer. How many staff and what are they paid?
There's one full-time staff at the moment, which is myself as the executive director. I have a part-time assistant, and we contract with a professional training manager who works part-time, but coordinates with our various trainers. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly the salary numbers across the board, but I could get them to you.
You know your own?
Senator Goodman.
My own, yes. My base pay is $62,000.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? There is no further discussion. Senate File 650 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator, go on.
No, I